Hey Randy, no jokes today because we're going to be talking about quite a serious topic, burnout, and more generally, stress.
Lily, this comes up almost every time I get together with a group of product people, so I'm really glad that we're spending some time talking about it.
And I guess we like to think of ourselves as the mum and dad, or maybe the cool auntie and uncle of this glorious product community. And we really want to take care of you all and make sure you all feel good about your work.
But, you know, unfortunately, that doesn't happen all the time. And Dominic Yost, head of product at Doist, is here today to share his story of how he experienced burnout, how he's recovered, and how he now manages both his own stress and looks out for the people around him.
This is a heartfelt episode, so please give our amazing guest, Dominic, all the love for sharing his story.
The Product Experience is brought to you by Mind the Product. Every week on the podcast, we talk to the best product people from around the globe.
Visit mindtheproduct.com to catch up on past episodes and discover loads of free resources to help you with your product practice. You can also find more information about Mind the Product's conferences and their great training opportunities happening around the world and online.
Create a free account on the website for a fully personalized experience and to get access to the full library of awesome content and the weekly curated newsletter. Mind the Product also offers free Product Tank meetups in more than 200 cities. There's probably one near you. Dominic, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm excellent. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Well, we're really excited to have you, and just so everyone knows why we're excited, do you mind doing a quick introduction? Tell us, how did you first get into product and what are you doing these days?
I would say like my transition to product was pretty typical. So I started out as a software engineer many, many moons ago. And somehow along the lines, got to know that there's this other thing called product management, which sounded way cooler than actually coding. So I transitioned over to product management and yeah, never looked back. And today I'm the head of product at Doist. We're a company building productivity software like Todoist. Hopefully everybody knows of that. And Twist, which is a team messenger app.
Great. So we asked you to come on today because you did this really, I want to say lovely. It was a really touching talk when we last hung out together in Lisbon towards the end of last year, talking about stress and burnout and your experiences with it. But before we talk about you and talk about how you dealt with it and the lessons other people can take from it, I'm curious, you know, whenever I get together with people, whenever I'm coaching people, I see a lot of people talking about stress and burnout in our profession. Why is it, do you think, that so many product people suffer from this? Or is that actually accurate? And am I just projecting?
Yeah. Like, to be honest, I'm not quite sure, but I have a theory. I think product management is one of those roles that has this imbalance between a lot of accountability, a lot of responsibility, and then also a lot of ambiguity when it comes to the definition of what the job actually is. So you've got objectives to chase, you've got KPIs to hit, and it's not quite sure how exactly you're going to do that. And you're relying on a lot of other people doing their part for you to be successful. And then I think also adding to that is most PMs that I've got to know over the last couple of years also have this obsessive drive, you know, to be the best and to sort of meet the standards of what everybody else seems to be talking about in terms of, you know, they're doing their OKRs this way and doing their OKRs that way. And this thought leader said this and that thought leader said that. So I think it's just like it's an environment that doesn't help, right? And that's why I think a lot of us talk about this because it doesn't take much to really get to that point where you're starting to ask all these questions around burnout and stress.
And I think one of the things you looked into is the sort of different components of stress. So talk us through sort of what you found out about what makes up stress.
Yeah, so I have to say that those components, like, I didn't invent any of this, right? Everything that I learned and that I'm sharing is something that I picked up during my own therapy sessions. So for instance, this particular three component or this composition of stress is based on a professor, Dr. Gerd Kaluza. I think he's German or maybe he's Austrian. And I've since noticed that a lot of other professor, doctor, so-and-so have similar models. So maybe it's like a public domain thing. But yeah, it's essentially three parts. And if you know how like a very simple process works, where you've got an input and then a thing that transforms an input into an output, you can sort of visualize how those three components are sort of put together. So the first component is stressors. So those are external signals that you most of the time don't have an influence over. So things that happen that sort of trigger you in some way or another. And then the second component are personal amplifiers. So that's essentially the makeup of who you are as a person, all the experiences that you've lived through, how your brain works, because that's what takes those stressors and then turns them into some sort of physical or emotional reaction, which is the third component. So you've got the stressors, you've got your amplifiers, and then you have the reactions. And just decomposing stress into those three components, I think is already a big step, or at least was a big step for me in order to manage my stress levels a lot better.
And I guess from what you were saying earlier around, you know, your sort of hypothesis, if you will, of why product people experience burnout more than others, potentially, or at least as much as some, that, you know, the stressors then being that kind of demand of expectation and ambiguity, and then also the personal amplifiers being the expectation of yourself and the kind of the demand that you put on yourself, and then the reaction being burnout. Is that a good interpretation of those three different components?
Yeah, I think that's the best TLDR I've heard ever. So yeah.
Phew, I got it right. I've passed the class.
Dominic, tell us a little bit about your experience. I mean, you were really brave and generous in sharing it at the conference, and I know you've done it at other talks. But there was a specific day where you realized, oh my God, this is something, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure about the brave part, but thank you anyway. So that specific date is, I would say, that was sort of the pinnacle of everything that came before. So it's not when the stress and the burnout started, but it was more of, you know, when everything sort of started to crumble together and led to me having to take time off work, going into therapy, and then sort of getting back.
So yeah. Let me ask you, I saw you do this talk, you talked about that day and your experiences on that day. Can we ask what was leading up to it in terms of, had you noticed some of this going on and it just changed? What was the experience like, and then what changed?
Yeah, so the experience particularly on that day was like going from, so I had a lot of work, you know, like most PMs or most people in product, it was a Friday that I remember. I had a lot of work lined up and also a lot of work lined up for the next week. And I remember just going from, okay, how do I make everything come together on Friday and then over the weekend, right? Because we always have our weekends to use as a working time as well. So it went from, okay, this is just a matter of sort of puzzle, like putting a puzzle together, and then going from that to, I just can't do this anymore. Like it was so instantaneously. And the best way I can describe that transition was as if somebody like dimmed a light, you know, like a lamp. And it wasn't like a explosion, or like, I've heard so many different variations of this, right? I think that experience is super personal. I've heard variations from people just not being able to do like move and, you know, do anything. And for me, it was more of as if somebody switched off a couple of lights in the house. And it went from of course you can do it. You know, you've done this a million times before to, I have no clue what I'm doing here. And is this worth my time and my energy? And like asking a lot of like very important questions from one moment to the other. And the things leading up to that, yeah, I would say it was quite a journey. Probably took like 6 to 12 months, like just looking back, you know, there was a buildup and, you know, in hindsight, it was just so obvious that I wasn't on a healthy path. And even like after I told, you know, my colleagues and teams that, yeah, I'm sort of not coming back. Some of them were like, yeah, we sort of saw that coming. You know, that's it. It's at the time I found that a bit like just not helpful, mm-hmm. you know, and I also wondered like, you know, why didn't you say anything? Mm-hmm. And I've since come to realize that this has happened with two friends of mine where, you know, I told them my burnout story. They would tell me what they're going through and I would be able to tell them, look, if you don't change what you're doing now, you're going to end up in the same situation. And we had great conversations and I thought, you know, I figured all this burnout stuff out. I told them about the three components and everything. And then they still, you know, weren't able to escape, quote unquote, escape, and they burned out. So it just, like for me, one of the takeaways there is it doesn't matter who besides you figures out that you're on the bad path. Like, you know, you need to find ways to come to that realization yourself, because all the changes that you need to make, like they start with you. Like nobody, you know, nobody can make any of these changes for you. Yeah. So long story short, in terms of what the buildup was, I think it all came down to a couple of things. One was in my role as the chief product officer, my role changed in those 2.5 years that I was in that role. It changed from the definition changed, what the company required of that role changed mid-flight. So there was already a mismatch there in terms of, you know, I'm trying to give my best to the company. And even the way I'm saying it, right, to the company, right? So I'm giving myself to the company because there's a higher goal that I was trying to achieve and, you know, trying to sacrifice myself for the team. So that was one thing. And then the second one was sort of a feeling of losing control, if that makes sense. Because again, you always navigate in that area of high ambitions. You're trying to achieve things, but then also as a product person, you have so many pieces you need to juggle, and most of those pieces are not under your direct control. And so that was the second component. And then the third one, which I think for me was the biggest one, was sort of like a drifting apart of values, right? So like, yeah, my personal values somehow no more aligning with the values that the company had started to, or the values that the company had. And I always thought that was very aligned. But then also, yeah, it, just in those maybe 1.5 years, all these three things started to overlap and come together. And yeah, just looking back, it felt like a huge struggle, you know, just trying to keep everything in place and trying to be brave in front of the team and, you know, just being like, yeah, you know, we'll do this. And then obviously COVID hit and everything, you know, so all of these things together, yeah, were the build up to that day on, yeah, that Friday, exactly. The 20th October, I think, or September, I'm not more sure.
Yeah. Well, firstly, you know, like as Randy said, thank you so much for sharing your story. I imagine there's probably a lot of people listening who relate to what you're talking about. What would you, like, knowing what you know now and thinking back on that experience, like, what do you think could have been done differently? Like, would you have spoken to people in the team, or do you think you needed to just extract yourself from that business and that role?
Yeah, I've been asking myself this question quite a few times. And so I don't think there's a general answer to this, but like in my particular case, talking to people was certainly something that I didn't do, right? I just tried to figure out stuff by myself. And so that's definitely something that I'm doing differently now. And then the other thing was also, you know, just I was so like entangled with my job, right? It was also intertwined with the job and the company. And I think I just found it very hard to not have like my performance affect my personal life. Right. So it was almost like who I am is also like who I am outside of the company is the same person who I am in the company. And if I'm successful at work, it sort of means successful, you know, in life and in my personal situation. So those two identities almost were the same thing. So when something didn't, you know, wasn't working out, at the company, it would also affect like, you know, everything outside. So just having a better sense of, well, that's easier said than done, but right, understanding what my personal values are versus what the company needs, and then also just finding that separation and that distance, you know, that healthy distance between, yeah, not having your self-worth be dependent on your performance at work. Mm. So I think that was like another big thing, which is, yeah, easier said than done. And then maybe the last thing, which I do think is I believe like general advice, like my transition from a product director to a chief product officer it felt like a linear change, but it was more of a step change, right? Completely different job. It had the word product in the title, but it's an executive role that happens to have product as one of the vehicles to do executive work. And I don't think I like fully appreciated that step change. And therefore I also went into this job maybe not as prepared as I should have been, you know, in terms of coaching, support, etc. So I would definitely advise anyone who is taking on a role that is significantly different than what they're currently doing to find a way to either self-finance your coaching or to bake that into that transition at work.
Yeah, I know, Will, you're in your first proper CPO role, and I work with a lot of CPOs of a community of CPOs. It's a totally different job. It's you're not just the thing that got you there. Being a really good product person is no longer the sum total of your job. You're now helping to run the company and responsible for different things, and it's a totally different viewpoint. Yeah, I see so many people who struggle with exactly that transition.
So just thinking about what led to the burnout again, I can imagine people listening to this and thinking, you know, checking themselves and their own situation and worrying, like, actually, I do feel really stressed out. I do feel under a lot of pressure. How do we assess our own situation to understand if we're under healthy pressure and stress versus unhealthy and like heading in the wrong direction?
So one thing is definitely thinking about stress in those three components and then assessing each component individually. Right. So if somebody says I'm stressed, you know, that could mean a lot of different things. The first thing is like, where do you feel the stress? Like a lot of people have some sort of bodily pain, right? Back pains, or they get headaches, etc. So those are signals to listen to. But it's almost like with leading and lagging indicators, like once your body registers the stress, it's probably, you know, you probably need to do something about it. So that's one aspect, just thinking about these three things. And then also just observing, you know, how frequent they are. Like, do you have back pains on very specific kinds of things that you're doing, right? If you have a board meeting and then is it like 2 days before that, you know, your body starts to react. So just noticing all these different things, I think, is very, very important. And then I would say the other thing is like how, you know, differentiating like good stress and bad stress, I think, is very, very tough. Yeah, especially if you've never gone through, say, you know, if you've never had to cross that line into burnout, sometimes it feels like the same way. And I think the best way that I can describe it is there any hope? it sounds stupid, but if you're under stress, you know, do you feel like you have the capacity and the capability to sort of navigate whatever is in front of you, right? It doesn't mean it's going to be perfect or it's going to be easy, but like, you know, do you feel like, yeah, you know, with some help, I can see myself achieving whatever I need to achieve? Or like, do you feel just, you know, desperate and deflated and you've lost sort of all hope? So I think that feeling of how sure are you, or how much are you willing to bet on yourself to navigate this situation is probably a good indicator on, yeah, whether it's a kind of stress that you need to be looking closer into.
Hey, we have a special message for listeners in London and Amsterdam. Mind the Product is hosting a free meetup for product leaders. Join us for an amazing evening with an expert panel and a chance to swap knowledge with your peers. These events are open only to directors, VPs, and chief product officers. To attend, you just need to be in the Mind the Product Leadership Program. If you're not, just sign up at mindtheproduct.com/product-leadership-program. And that's program spelled the American way, PROGRAM. Sign up now and then join us on the 23rd of April in London or the 16th of May in Amsterdam. One last time, it's mindtheproduct.com/product-leadership-program. See you soon. Dominic, how do you manage your stress now? You talked about a matrix or a canvas that you use, an approach that you advised other people on. But tell us about what goes into that.
Yeah, so that canvas, again, is sort of based on Professor Doctor. And it's essentially taking those three components and then asking yourself, for instance, with the stressors, how can you prevent the exposure to those external stressors, right? You can't control whether those things happen, but you can control whether, well, not always, but you know, you can make a decision whether or not to expose yourself to those. So that's like one aspect. And then you do that three times. So how can you prevent those stressors? In regards to the personal amplifiers, that's more of practicing some sort of reflection technique, which is a very vague term of saying, you've got to learn your values, who you are and what you want. And then you need to be able to compare those things, you know, those non-negotiables that only matter to you, and compare them constantly to the things that are being requested of you, right? And as long as that overlap is good, you're all good. But as soon as those things start to drift apart, that's already a warning signal. And then the third part. Oh yeah, so visually, think of a 2x3, right? Not a 2x2, but a 2x3. And then the third part is, are those reactions, so those physical and emotional reactions. And the best way to think about that is you just need coping techniques, you know, things like breathing exercises, just a way to regulate, just a way to counteract those reactions very, very quickly, because there's not much else you can do, right? If you're stressed out and you're shaking and, you know, you have super shallow breathing, there's no amount of help self book you can read in that instance to get you sort of back into the, you know, green mode. So those are sort of the three things: prevention, reflection, and then some form of relaxation techniques that you have to figure out for yourself, like what works for you in those three discrete stress Lego blocks.
I think that sounds great. And I imagine people probably hold a lot of this information internally. So just being able to map that out and acknowledge it and recognize it and use it when you're feeling stressed and, you know, when you need a bit of recovery sounds like a really good idea. We didn't really talk about how you recovered from your, I guess, your sort of acknowledgement of, I sort of feel like we need to rebrand burnout because it sounds so negative, but in a way it's quite positive in a sense of it's an acknowledgement of, no, I'm not going to take this shit anymore and I need to prioritize myself. So I feel like it needs a rebrand. I'll leave that with someone else to decide what it should be called. But after that moment of realization, like, what were your next steps then? How, you know, what was your kind of path to recovery and to getting into a better place?
So the first thing was actually going to see a specialist, right? So it started out as a just not feeling so well or not feeling up to the task, and then sort of snowballed into a mini breakdown, and then a realization that, okay, I'm, you know, lots of questions in terms of, am I still capable? You know, am I a fraud? Like, very, very, yeah, like questioning your core existence, essentially. So yeah, that led into therapy with a specialist. And through that therapy, just learning different techniques, learning about why the things happen that happen and how to sort of, you know, like move forward. And after that therapy, the question then was, do I go back into the job? Like, do I go back into the same role? Do I go back to the same company, but in a different role? Like, all of these questions that then have nothing to do with therapy, but more to do with, you know, like your livelihood. How are you going to earn money? You know, is all of these like existential questions started to come up. And in addition to, say, like classical therapy, I also had a business coach who would walk me through, say, more of the career side of things, you know, in terms of, so what are your strengths actually? Because I had all these questions of, am I good at anything? Because, you know, all my peers at the executive level, they also have a lot of stress, and how come I'm the only one who's sort of failing, you know? So that dual path of therapy and like professional coaching was my path back. And it quickly became clear that I wouldn't go back into that CPO role, but I wasn't quite sure what to do next. So luckily for me, you know, I've been working at the company for a very long time. So we found a way for me to be useful and helpful by, you know, I think supporting others for a couple of days per week. And then that was, for me, that was very important so that I could just like get back into the flow of working and getting a sense of what I'm still capable of and what I actually enjoy doing and what I'm good at. And after doing that for, I think, 1 or 2 months, it also just became clear that, yeah, it's like the story has ended with the company and me, and it's just time to move on and, you know, do something else. And that entire process took, I think, almost 6 months from that Friday to coming to making the decision that, yeah, it's time, it's just time to say goodbye, say thank you, and move on.
Dominic, you've managed people over this time since you've come back. What do you look for in the teams that you manage and your peers? As a manager, are you responsible for the stress of other people? Do you take that into account, or how do you deal with the people that you work with?
I wish I weren't responsible for the stress for other people, but I guess I am.
It's a tough one, because, you know, when I've managed people, sometimes I feel like I'm responsible, but at the same time, I've counseled people to do less, to change their approach at times, and sometimes they don't listen. So I can't take full responsibility. So how do you approach, I guess I'm asking, how do you approach this?
I'm still figuring this out, because I truly believe that you need to manage that yourself, you know? So I'm sort of on your side here, that there's just so much you can influence from the outside. So yeah, I'm still figuring this out. But if I compare like my management style now versus before the burnout, I think the biggest difference is to just remain in a state where I'm just fully capable of not only reacting, but actually acting, right? So just trying to not be at max capacity the whole time. And yeah, I've just found that I'm a lot more, I have the capability of helping people or helping my team in a different way than when I'm struggling with my own bullshit, right? So that's like the first thing. And then the other thing is just taking the teams along for the ride and not bottling everything up or trying to protect them from, you know, quote unquote, bad management and all these other evil things and creating this paradise of a product org where everybody's best friends and, you know, there's no pressure and we can just do whatever we like and not care about revenue or growth or any of those things. And, you know, just be upfront and work through those things together. But I'm still learning, to be honest. So if ever anyone else has a great idea or a great approach, please let me know.
No, that's great. I'm curious though, is having gone through this yourself, is there anything you look for as warning signs in other people that we could take as a lesson?
I would say like mood swings or like, when people sort of change their vibe slightly. But that means you need to get to know your people very, very well, right? And you need to understand what their normal state looks like and how they operate at, say, you know, regular capacity and how they start operating when things are getting tough. And just having gone through all of that myself, I feel like I can sense it. It sounds a bit dumb, but when things are just not the way they normally are, just asking, offering help, trying to work through some of the challenges. Yeah, and then also maybe change in communication style. If somebody shares a lot and is very outgoing and then suddenly they just flip and they're just answering in short messages or not answering at all, or, you know, I think you just need to try and spot behavioral changes, which is part of what we do as product managers. So applying some of those product management skills to your own team and squad members, I think, is a good first step.
I think one of the things that I've seen that works quite nicely for something like this is a regular survey, which kind of gives like a pulse on how the employees are feeling about their work and the business and, you know, what sort of levels of stress they feel like they're under. And that way, you know, you can see kind of what feels normal for the team. And then if it's trending in the wrong direction, always love a little bit of data. And that's quite easy to set up as well, because you just set it up as a sort of, you know, recurring poll. So yeah, I found that quite helpful in previous jobs.
I'm going to steal that. I think that is cool. We do something similar at Duist, but yeah, I'm definitely going to steal that. Well, I think one tell is too much sarcasm. Like that is, I mean, PMs are a very sarcastic bunch, right? But sometimes it just goes way over the line. And
no, it's we're just, not.
it's just too much for too long. I think that's a very... That's something to watch out for. And then maybe the other one is sort of going back to this feeling of being, deflated and not quite sure whether you can trust yourself with the challenge at hand. Is if somebody's struggling to walk you through how they would go about achieving what they're working on or the goals that they're trying to hit, you know, if they're sort of like, I don't know, beats me, those are not good signs. And I think those are signs that definitely somebody's struggling. But if that's like the status quo, then yeah, they're not in a good space and you need to help. And I think sometimes it's super tough because PMs are mostly like very driven. So even if you're in that state, you'll sort of, there's this pride attached, you know, where you'll be like, no, I'll figure it out next week. And then next week turns into next month, turns into, you know, the next quarter, and before you know it, your team members redlining, and for everybody, it's going to be a big surprise when they burn out.
Mm. And one of the things about Doist is it's a fully remote company, I believe, isn't it?
Yes.
So how do you kind of learn about your team? Like, what are the things that you have put in place to learn more about, like, what the status quo looks like for the team versus like the team under pressure or the team extra happy?
I think the tools are very similar. So have regular one-on-ones, don't skip them. I have weekly one-on-ones. We also have a weekly sort of team meeting. So you can catch, you know, the vibe and the groove pretty quickly. And then although we are fully remote and async first, we have regular retreats. So we meet a couple of times in person, 4 to 6 days, depending on how big the retreat is. And that's where you also pick up on, you know, all the other things, because you get to hang out after work and just get to know each other a lot better. So I think it's a combination of these two things. And then lastly, we are a pretty small company, so you work with people, you know, very, very frequently. So I think that is almost the most important part, where you get to collaborate on the same piece of work rather than just managing from a distance and managing via, oh, that person told me that, you know, that other person is struggling. So yeah, I would say it's fairly, I think, unexciting that it is pretty much the same as you would, the same techniques that you would use if you were co-located.
Dominic, this has been fantastic. I want to thank you again for being so open and sharing this with everyone. It's I think it's really important. And my favorite radio station has a great theme that they talk about all the time. They say, you sign off with saying, you are not alone. And sometimes I think we sometimes feel like we're alone, and just hearing someone else talk about this and recognizing, no, none of us are that special. We're all very special, but we're not that special. And when we feel stress, when we feel like there's problems, and there are ways of dealing with this. So thank you.
I like that quote, and I'm going to steal that as well. So two things I'm stealing from this interview. Thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime. And we're stealing a lot from you. Don't worry. And I hope that everyone listening is got stuff out of this. To wrap up, Dominic, is there anything that you want to leave people with? And is there one tip that you want people to walk away from this podcast with?
My one tip would be, if you've never asked yourself what your personal values are, start with that. I think start with that. Just ask yourself, what is it that you want? What is the vision of your product, which is your life? Like, we do all of these things every single day with our products, but we never ask ourselves, what is our vision for ourselves? You know, what's our strategy in achieving that vision and all of these things? So start with your personal values. What are those? And then ask yourself whether you're violating them on a regular basis, or whether what you're doing every single day aligns with those values. And if they do, continue on and let me know what that job is, because I want to know. And if you see that you're sort of going against the grain, then I think that's a strong signal for you to do something.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dominic. It's been so great talking to you today.
Thank you.
The Product Experience is the first
and the best
podcast from Mind the Product. Our hosts are me, Lily Smith.
And me, Randy Silver.
Luron Pratt is our producer and Luke Smith is our editor.
Our theme music is from Hamburg-based band POW, that's P-A-U. Thanks to Arnie Kittler, who curates both Product Tank and MTP Engage in Hamburg, and who also plays bass in the band, for letting us use their music. You can connect with your local product community via Product Tank, regular free meetups in over 200 cities worldwide.
If there's not one near you, maybe you should think about starting one. To find out more, go to mindtheproduct.com/producttank.